News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR.
On News Talk.
Good morning to you, Taoiseach.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us this morning. We've a lot to get through. I asked our listeners before we started this interview what they wanted me to ask you. And perhaps unsurprisingly, a huge amount of it was about Billy Kelleher. And I'll give you the gist. It was that Billy Kelleher, lifelong member of the party, an elected representative. Why was he overlooked for somebody by yourself rather than by the party? Because he did get quite a lot of votes. For someone with no party affiliation to Fianna Fáil.
Well, first of all, I think in terms of the presidency, it's not just about party and cannot just be about party. When Éamon de Valera created the presidency in 1937 constitution, he wanted actually to be above party politics. He wanted the presidency to be. And that was evidenced by the support of Douglas Dehida at the time, who was a non-party political candidate. Subsequently happened in terms of Carola Dalig, Mary McAleese and others who were not TDs or who were not ministers. I wasn't aware of Billy's interest in the candidacy until quite late in the day. I think he, in fairness to himself, he would have said he'd made up his mind late August or middle of August at the latest.
If you had been, would have influenced you?
No, at that stage, we had substantive engagement with Jim Gavin, had met with Jim Gavin, and we had agreed that Jim Gavin, at the leadership level, would be our candidate. We didn't want to become part of the silly season in August, to be frank, with names up and down and speculation and lots of people looking for the presidency. And that's why I said I would clarify the situation at the end of the month with the parliamentary party. But in many ways, the Billy coming into the race and Jim, it was a good energetic contest within the party. And our sense was, and my sense was, and I've worked with Billy all my life, but that Jim would have the broader base, had great, in terms of his own life experience, in terms of his experience in Dublin, peacekeeper, particularly in charge of the greatest, one of the biggest humanitarian missions in Chad, which would have, he headed the UN military aviation on that. His work with the northeast inner city. There's a breadth and depth to him, I think, that would appeal to people beyond the Fianna Fáil fold. And I think that's an important consideration. The presidency is above party politics. I don't see it as a possession.
So you would refute allegations of disloyalty?
Yeah, that's not on the agenda. I mean, I was there when Mary McAleese won, against Albert Reynolds and against Micheála Kennedy, and very similar sort of ideas were behind that, that Mary McAleese at that time would have the breath to really bring
I see that, but he is trailing behind, for example, Heather Humphreys, and I would imagine you're worried that poll that says over one in four Fianna Fáil voters would actually vote for Heather Humphreys ahead of him.
I have to ignore the polls. I'm surprised you keep quoting polls to me. I mean, they got it
wrong.
That's
all we have, Taoiseach.
But they got it wrong. It's all you have. But like, you shouldn't put as much emphasis on them at this early stage of the presidency, because the last 10 days will tell the issue, really, will decide the issue after all of the campaigning.
If he does do badly, and he is your man, will that be an issue for you and your leadership?
Jim Gavin, no, it will not. But Jim Gavin will do well. Already we're picking up very strong support. What struck me when we were considering him, and I would have met people around the country, I didn't necessarily say to them that we were considering Jim Gavin, but his name would come up in conversation. And people who worked with him or were involved with him in his military career, in sport, or in the Aviation Authority, or in Dublin inner city, speak very highly of his character and his integrity and
I'm sure.
professionalism. And I think that stands for something.
So it won't impact on your leadership, and you have said that you will still lead Fianna Fáil into the next general election. That is your plan?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, the issue isn't about me. The issue is about housing. It's about disability. It's about dealing with child poverty.
The presidency, those are the issues for the presidency.
No, I'm saying about, you just asked would I be leading into the next general election. I'm saying I will, but my focus, I've just been elected as Taoiseach about 9 months ago. And I know the political correspondents have to keep on asking these questions. I've been asked them since I became leader of the party. But I think the public out there get tired of that. The public really are concerned about housing, which is a huge issue for the young people of this country. They're very concerned about proper access to therapies for children and people more generally.
And
they're very concerned then in terms of, can we deliver infrastructure faster?
And I want to move on to all of that, but I have one last question for you around the presidency.
Sorry.
Okay. Jim Gavin has said that he will run for one term only if he was to get in. You have said you're going to lead into the next general election, the leader of Fianna Fáil. But that does open up the presidency perhaps in 7 years' time. Will you go for it then? Because you were certainly touted as a possibility in this run.
7 years' time is an eternity. That's not on my horizon at all.
That's not a no, Taoiseach.
Well, it's not on my horizon. I mean,
still not a no.
Could I just say, like, we have lives too as people. I think it's extraordinary that kind of. And I saw some backbencher, some anonymous backbencher say, well, he's trying to hang on for 7 years' time. I mean, in the name of God, like, anything could happen within the next 7 years. But I have things to do, you know, as well outside of politics.
And I do want to get into the housing. I do want to get into all of that, because I think those are our issues. But before we move on to that, just one of the huge news stories of the past week is the murder of Charlie Kirk. Obviously, we have seen a huge level of abuse levelled at Irish politicians. Do you believe that we could see something similar happen here, that we could see a political assassination occur in this country with the direction of travel in terms of the heat on social media and the kind of rhetoric we see now? We know there's been credible threats to Simon Harris.
I think we have to be careful of how we predict things like that. There's a number of contributing factors in the United States. We're not immune from what's happening in the US or from the United Kingdom, for that matter. And you know, MPs have been murdered in the United Kingdom as well. Security people will say to you, and our own security will say to me, a lone wolf attack is the greatest fear that security services have in respect of any politician. Sometimes there will be threats where there might be a mental illness involved, and those are handled fairly discreetly, and will never see the light of day in the public profile. I trust the Gardaí here. I trust the security advice that I get. The attacks on Simon Harris, and particularly in terms of members of his family, are abhorrent and shocking. Mm-hmm. I worry very much about the nature of discussion on social media and the anger directed at others because of their ethnicity in this country. I met with young people last week in the context of the Child Poverty Summit. And one young woman told me that her parents came to Ireland many years ago from Asia, and she clearly has the features, and she said that she's afraid to go into town now. She'd been called. Another young man said his young sister was being chased home from school. So there's a growth in and an increase in violence and aggression against people on the basis of their ethnicity, and that's a real tipping point and turning point in Ireland. And we've got, I think, those of us who abhor that, all right-thinking people do need to challenge that.
You are fully right, and I wouldn't argue that point, and that's fully wrong, but there's also an issue with people being threatened because of their views or their political position, and that's really what I was asking. But for example, the kneecap thing, kill your local MP.
That's wrong. I mean, people have to, those kind of sentiments are wrong. Look, I condemn the murder of Charlie Kirk. I mean, but I've been reading a fair bit on it. There's other factors there too. I mean, there's a phenomenon in the US of young men in particular withdrawing from society, becoming immersed in social media, video games. And there seems to be a sense here that that is a factor here. I think the gun laws in America, which are so which means guns are so accessible to so many people, high-powered guns that can result in a shocking murder like that.
Thankfully.
So there are circumstances here that are mitigating, but nonetheless, there is there's a coarseness to public language now that I do worry about.
And can I just ask you lastly on this, that do you think that NECAP, for example, who have been very fated for their position, their pro-Palestinian position in this country, are getting a pass on things like the only good Tory is a dead Tory?
Well, I'm not so sure they're getting a pass on that. I think they're beginning to realise that some of that is not okay, and it's that's that kind of language. We as I said earlier, MPs lost their have been murdered in the United Kingdom, and I think everybody in public life, in entertainment or whatever, and in entertainment there generally has been, you know, there's been people have said things on stage down through the ages and so on like that. That's nothing new. But I do think that in the current context and climate we are in, we have to be very, very careful. I think all of it speaks to an absence of creating space for discussion and debate. And that worries me greatly. Everything is either you're on one side or the other side. There's no sort of discussing the grey areas of life anymore.
Taoiseach, yesterday you spoke with Antoinette Burke, who is seeking a hip replacement for her 18-year-old daughter, Katie. After that, she spoke to Kieran Cuddihy on the Hard Shoulder. If you wouldn't mind popping on those headphones, just have a little listen to some of what she had to say.
2022 was the last time we saw anybody in Enable Ireland. She was then referred onto an adult surgeon in the National Orthopaedic Hospital. And when we saw him, he told us the same thing. Katie was too weak for surgery. It's an ongoing campaign all the time, like, to try and get Katie what she needs. You know, it's exhausting, it's draining, because I've given up hope on anything happening in this country for Katie. You know, when you're fighting 15 years with soldiers and they're telling you no, you do give up.
Taoiseach, I said to you earlier that I asked people what they wanted. One of the huge things was all about the presidency, but the other thing that came in repeatedly was the issue of people with children with disabilities. Why do families have to fight so hard to get access to care and particularly to surgery in this country? We are not a poor country, and it seems to me that there isn't a family out there who is in this position that isn't struggling to get the kind of care that they need.
Well, first of all, I mean, huge resources have gone to surgery and so forth. This case is a bit more complex, and I met with Antoinette yesterday, and I've asked Bernard Glasser to reach out and to engage with Antoinette as well. Bernard Glasser being the Chief Executive Officer of the Health Service Executive. The issue in this case, in terms of Katie's need for surgery, the consultants have a different perspective on it than Antoinette. And
we don't even need to personalise.
Well, I think
it's
not a case that there's an absence of access. This case is an absence of a clinical decision to go ahead with surgery, which is a different thing.
We know about the delays in scoliosis. We know about Harvey Morrison. This is an ongoing.
I think the
issue in the background for, it seems to me, all families with children with disabilities.
Depending, I think in orthopaedics and in scoliosis, there has been very significant issues, notwithstanding all of the resources that have been allocated to CHI in respect of spinal in particular. And notwithstanding, there's been a significant increase in the number of surgeries and so on that have been carried out year by year. There are still too many children waiting too long for surgery. Surgery for a child with scoliosis should be when the time is right for that child.
4 months was what Simon Harrison was.
Well, whenever it's right for a child in terms of the
certainly speed is of the essence.
Pathway, absolutely. And we're going to, notwithstanding what we've done so far, we have to do more in terms of recruit, and it's about recruiting highly qualified surgeons, additional surgeons, and their teams.
So is that the issue? It's staff?
It has been an issue in the past. There was a number of issues have occurred within CHI, I know, that reduced capacity again, they're well aired and they've been the subject of inquiries. But there is further recruitment has taken place, I understand, now in terms of an additional surgeon. But capacity is obviously key to it, and a consistency and sustainable capacity then that enables people to get surgery when they require.
Taoiseach, moving on to housing, which is something that you yourself mentioned earlier, a report in the Business Post shows that 3,000 houses there was land zoned in my own hometown of Greystones for 3,000 houses, that zoning has been rescinded by the local council. This seems incomprehensible to those of us looking at the housing crisis thinking it's going to be fixed. First of all, what is going on and why isn't the government able to stop this kind of thing from happening?
Well, I think the first point is that that shouldn't happen. My understanding
is, it has.
Well, I'm not sure, has it been fully disowned as of yet? But I mean, that is a proposal. We have an issue here, and I've said this yesterday. We've published a recent national planning framework, which gives the opportunity now for councils to zone far more land. We want far more rezoning than we currently have because we need far more houses. We have a crisis. And I'm not sure the county, many CEOs in county councils get that. And they seem to be suggesting back that they're not prepared to rezone.
How would they not get it considering the country that we live in?
I don't know. And we're going to one by one meet with CEOs of county councils and city councils to make sure that land is rezoned. And as I said yesterday, if councils are not going to rezone, the government will take powers to rezone.
You're going
land.
To step in.
Yes, and we're already stepping in. The minister has already instructed city councils and county councils in the context of the national planning framework to rezone land. And history tells us that even if you rezone significant amounts of land, not all of it immediately turns to housing. But you need to have that bit done first.
And I know that there are some people who would argue that the zoning of land isn't the issue. Let me ask you.
But it's vital. I mean, our population has exponentially grown. I mean, 400,000 extra jobs were created in this country in the last 5 years. 400,000 extra jobs in our economy. The population is getting back to pre-famine, which is a good thing on the island. So the population growth has been fairly significant. And that's an issue in itself in terms of trying to meet that population growth with services that we just talked about in health and education. Infrastructure needs to catch up for that population. And above all, housing needs to catch up. And I think the mindset has to change in county councils and city councils. We are in a new era. We're not fighting the last war. We're not fighting the last crash. We're in a new era now.
Okay.
People are paying too much for houses, and we need more land rezoned, and we need more houses built.
Which begs the question, I think, if you were still a teacher, if you were 30 now, and maybe on, I was trying to work it out, maybe you'd be on 0.7 on the teaching scale if you were about 30, if you qualified in your early 20s, about 50 grand a year. What would you do, Taoiseach? Because it would be very, very difficult for you to afford a house.
I know, and you know, I have kids myself who are in that situation. I think I was in around 30 when the deposit on our house, on our family home. And it was difficult then, but nowhere as difficult as it is now.
Would you emigrate?
No. Look, being me, probably wouldn't. But I'm not like, you know, people, we're all different people. And I was kind of wedded to my local community and so on like that. And I was on the city council at the time. So who knows? Today, who knows? And a lot of people are. But then again, this is a global phenomenon. It's a European phenomenon. It's not just an Irish phenomenon. You're not going to get housing elsewhere. Because I met the president of the European Investment Bank, former Spanish finance minister, who said to me that she's making it the key issue for the European Investment Bank. And she feels it will impact on the cohesion of Europe if we don't get on top of housing as an issue for our young people in particular.
Couple of things in brief before we finish up. The budget obviously is coming up. 57% of people say energy credits are the most important priority for them in this budget. Now, I know you're ruling out one-off, measures that are going to help people, but the cost of living is still an issue. We've been inundated with texts all morning about it. Can you offer people any comfort around things like energy credits?
Cost of living is a huge issue. We have already taken measures in terms of VAT and not allowing VAT go back up in terms of energy costs. We can't have a universal cost of living package this time. We've got to try and get public finances within some reasonable, sustainable framework.
So no.
And well, we're going to do measures within the main budget to help people, particularly people on low incomes and people who will be impacted
more. So targeted, but not universal.
There'll be targeted measures, but not universal. And also, we're investing in the future. We are putting a lot more money into the capital side of the budget in terms of housing, but also in terms of roads, in terms of public transport. And that has to simply happen. And in terms of the energy grid and in terms of water.
Okay.
And these are issues that we're becoming increasingly concerned about. I mean, the drainage scheme in Dublin being sent off to a judicial review. People need water. And to build houses, we need water supply and water connection. So we might have to look at bespoke legislation now to drive that through. And this is becoming an increasingly challenge to government in terms of navigating all of the various obstacles and barriers that are being put in our way.
Last question for you, Taoiseach. That UN finding, that report that says Israel is indeed committing genocide. This is the strongest wording, I suppose, we've seen from the UN. What needs to follow on from that now, in your view?
To me, the two biggest, most significant interventions. One, the United States, I think, government needs to intervene with Israel to stop this war. And the European Union collectively needs to do more to put pressure on Israel to stop this war. Israel is behaving in a manner that's oblivious to anybody. But to me, it's an appalling carnage that Israel is waging on the people of Gaza. I don't know how the members of the Israeli government can go to bed at night with a clear conscience in terms of the murder and slaughter of innocent children, the destruction of Gaza and of a society. Notwithstanding the horrors of what Hamas did on October the 7th, and I condemned that unequivocally. What is happening in Gaza is beyond any moral compass, and I think it will, for decades to come, will be a very big issue for society as to how it has happened and how it has been allowed to happen.
Taoiseach Micheál Martin, thank you very much for joining us.
News Talk Breakfast with Ciara Kelly and Shane Coleman.
In association with AIR
on News Talk.
Dibrig tugadian no chonig tugadian chahar seo. For his nyart, tahi agus derber de chud skillina. In ngachat eichen tu, fecken tu rod egen a chavrig tu a hogal. Ach an eish, tatu ig fechen ter an tauchi. Agus beidr gwyllt wig smin a verin art as a dagan tu. In Erin, tasti in plan olaha, shuneri, plumeri, dinadori, inaltori, alchery, bonishdori lotron, agus nias mowen, tasti in tu wen, ledachud skillina agus tahi galair, chun kaurulin the milta tiha a hogal, ton dawan toga agat, anish tara rash agus togan chach a hog tu. Tilla Olish at gov.ie/buildingireland. Chachtarocht o Realtis na Héireann.